Hello, and welcome to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast. This is John Goodwin, your host. This podcast is dedicated to the aspiring writer and artist and will provide inspiration and tips from top professionals in the field. If you've been listening to this podcast or are new to it, I thank you very much. I would also appreciate if you took a moment and followed on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts. In this episode, we're going to tackle a very sensitive subject, often used and more often misused in science fiction, politics. This week's guest is Joe Montaldo. He's been a guest on this podcast before on our very fun New Year's Eve resolution show, where we talked about the resolution to write and submit a story to Writers of the Future. Joe's a host on multiple award-winning shows, UFO Paranormal, News on the Flip Side, and The Centralist radio show. The Centralist is a political show. Joe takes the middle ground and focuses more on doing what is best for the USA and the world and not what's best for the politician. And from this platform, he has done hundreds of shows. He's also a very well-read show host, both fiction and nonfiction. I figure he'd be the perfect guest to discuss the topic of politics in fiction. Welcome back, Joe.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, John. You know, it's interesting you brought that up because I was back playing around on y'all's site today. I think I'm trying to get myself 3 credits. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the site where you can go learn how to write because God knows I need all the help I can get. I'm not going to act like I can write. But John and Emily turned me on to this. Ooh, I don't want to say how long ago. It's embarrassing. But anyway, I was thinking about that because I was reading, in about the middle of the book you sent me about L. Ron Hubbard. And for some reason, it triggered something in me that made me want to go back and look at the site on something else I wanted to add into something I've been thinking about writing. Or maybe not thinking about writing. I've actually started writing. So it's more like I've been kind of putting like it's like a jumble of paragraphs at this point. Let's just say it's like that. Just I got them spaced out and segregated because they're going to go in different places. But I got to go with the way my brain works. Unfortunately, that's just the way it works. But no, I love this particular topic because built in to a lot of sci-fi is a lot of politics, and whether we want to admit to it or believe it or not, sometimes politics takes a side. You know, sometimes it don't. Sometimes it just gets in, throws it in to, like it should be. I've seen a couple of like the new Expanse series that's out. They're heavy in politics. Yeah. But I noticed the show itself or the main characters itself don't so much take a side. They just take the course of what should be the right thing to do. And ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen the Expanse, you should really check it out. I'm not going to lie to you. It is heavy in politics. It gives you 3 factions to deal with. And it's very hardcore into its politics, but it lays it out in such a way that it doesn't matter what side you may be on, you can get behind someone. You can get behind the Earther, which are probably more conservative. You can get behind the Martians or the OPA, which are probably a little bit more liberal, or somewhere in the central. So you can actually get behind a character and really enjoy following it through their politics, but they do present it as politics here on our planet are today. How can I say this politely? Miserable, aggravating, and irritating, and a few other words I can't say on the air. But so they do present it that way so you can look into it. And it's always been a touchy subject because when I'm talking to someone, especially when I'm talking to younger people about reading anything sci-fi or watching anything sci-fi, I want to be real careful with mentioning the word politics, because in today's society, it has very negative connotations. And so I don't want to turn someone off of a series because I bought something about politics. But in this series, you really can get behind it. You can really enjoy it for what it is. It is very politically based. It gets behind different factions, and you can walk behind it. Also, it's also a great sci-fi. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of fun sci-fi. It's not like Star Trek where, in Star Trek world, everything is great. In Expanse, everything, not so much.
Yeah.
But it is really, and you can read them. I think all 6 years are available now, or all 5 years are available. And again, you're going to get more out of the book than you are out of the series. It's like anything else that's, any good book, unfortunately, it's hard to take a really good book and make it into a really good movie. There's been some people who have done it, like Dune and a few others, but it's hard. Because even in Dune's case, if you go back and read the book, there's a lot missing in the movie. And it's a 3-hour, 20-minute movie full of just full to the tilt, but still, and that's another movie that has a lot of politics in it.
Yeah, Dune's definitely a lot of politics.
Yeah, it had a lot of politics, and he wrote that way. Now, depending on what writers we're talking about, or what directors, or whatever, whoever the movies may be about, you may see a movie lean one way or another. I prefer when they do it the right way. They do it down the middle, and you can take whatever side you want to take and follow the movie or the series or whatever it may be along, because I want to enjoy it. You know, I may not agree with this political view or that political view, but that's life. You know, I'm not going to agree with all the views, especially in today's world. So I don't have a problem with that. And it does offer you sides, just like Dune did. Dune offered you sides. You didn't have to follow the guy, you know, who was about. There's also, in case you haven't seen Dune, there's also a lot of religious connotations in there as well. Yeah. So it doesn't catch you off guard. If you haven't watched it, you should see the movie. You should watch the original. You can watch the remakes. They're not horrible. They're not great, but they're not horrible. You can watch those as well. I think there's four. And, of course, there's a new one coming out. Well, last year it was supposed to come out. But anyway, sometime later this year, early next year, we should see a complete remake of the original series of Dune. I've heard good things about it, but until I actually see it, there's no way of knowing. But it does. It's going to lean heavy in politics.
And yeah. Well, the book itself is very much, Frank Herbert was very much giving a political side, because you've got the Harkonnens and
the Russians. You know, that's who they were.
What's that?
So the Harkonnens were the Russians.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got that type of, you know, all those different political factions and how the backstabbing, all the various things that gets done, the various intricacies with the politics. But then you've also got even earlier, Foundation with Isaac Asimov.
Yes.
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress with Heinlein. And then two of the biggest ones that have had the biggest comeback, I think, of late with all the recent cancel culture and some of the stuff that's been going on. You've got 1984 by George Orwell and Animal Farm by Orwell. Both of those have gotten a lot of attention. They did well on bestseller lists with only the newspeak that's happening right now.
Yeah. You know? And people, if you haven't read 1984, you really should. Whether you agree with the book or not, because there's parts of the book I'm like, whoa, and there's parts of the book I'm like, oh. But still, if it's something, you should just read it just to experience it. You may not agree with it. You may agree with it. A lot of the cancel culture is going to agree with part of it. A lot of cancel culture is not agree with other part of it. It lays out society in a much different way than it is right now. And I think you should read it. I think for the uninformed, it would be an eye-opener. And that's the easiest way I can say it. There are good books like that. And somebody just recently told me they revisited The Day the Earth Stood Still for its political, you know, and when I thought about it initially, I didn't feel to be as political as he was making it out to. But when I went back and watched the remake, I was wrong. Of course, there is more politics in there than there is other things. But that's yet another way of presenting politics into this. He's saying, look, they came here to unite the planet, and the planet basically gave him the bird finger. Because the factions of the world, meaning the powers to be, couldn't get along.
Yeah.
Everybody had their own agenda, which is politics today. And some agendas cross with each other and some agendas don't. And some agendas are very hostile to each other. And you see that in movies like that. You see that in series like The Expanse. You see that in a couple of things that John was just talking about. There are things laid out that you can see. And you can go back, you can go way back to the first color sci-fi ever made. It was, it's going to go right out of my head, isn't just because I brought it up. Leslie Nielsen was the lead actor in it, who turned out to be a comedian later on. Oh, I can't believe it. I can't remember. It was the first UFO I've ever seen on TV. I can't believe it.
War of the Worlds?
Forbidden Planet.
Okay.
And Forbidden Planet was a different kind of politics, but still, politics came into play there. And to what, you know, the Earth just thought about the guy's planet that he had, the things he had found on his planet. Of course, Earth is greedy and wanted everything that was found there. It was just another form of politics. And sci-fi, out of everything I've seen, somehow or another, gets away with politics that you will not see in other genres. It has a way of stuffing, like Babylon 5. It's one of my favorites because Babylon 5 is now about 25 years old. And it has a lot of great quotes in it, but what's interesting about Babylon 5 is it truly presents how Earth will be in space. If you watch this series, you will really, just like Expanse, you will really get an idea of how we're going to move around in space, how we're going to start with a base on the moon and then a launching platform, then a base on Mars, and then things out in the asteroid belts, and then things around the moons of Jupiter and Io and Saturn and places like that. and then out in the Oort cloud, and then finally we'll get out of our solar system. And that's truly how we're going to do it as a race. I mean, I've talked to Michio Kaku and Neil deGrasse Tyson about this on the air, and they agree we're going to take stepping stones to get out of here. And in both these series, it shows you the politics of the different sides at bay, how they're going to make their way through the universe. The only difference is in Babylon 5, Earth is united. Well, I guess it is. It's a united world. Well, I guess it is in Babylon 5 too. So it's Earth against the other factions, but each faction represents, you know, a faction here on Earth, like the Minbari might be. Well, they wouldn't be anything. It would be the Centauri. They would be like the Russians or the Chinese, actually. And then each one has a representation. It just shows you how on this huge space station in space, that politics going on. There's ambassadors there from Earth, ambassadors from a lot of different worlds, and they're doing their political thing every day. So we managed to get off Earth and get into space, and not only do we have politics at home, but we managed to have politics with extraterrestrials. So I have to give them credit. It's a well-done series. Expanse is a well-done series, too. It really puts you in the seat of where mankind may be in 100, 150, 200 years. And real, and it's in real time for us, because the politics will be the same. We will still be vying for minerals and resources and places to go in space, and it'll be there. The only thing I'm hoping is by then, everybody won't be trying to blow each other up. You know, but even that you can find in sci-fi.
It's interesting with science fiction, because science fiction, I think, is inherently a political genre. Any future or alternate history, it imagines a wish about how things should be and a warning of what could be. And I think one of the stories that, I mean, you've got, there's so many other, like The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick, you know, that was just an alternate America where the USA is being run as a totalitarian state, where Germany and Japan won World War II. Or right now, the Handmaid's Tale, that's a very scary future. But what is said, it's none of it's fiction. It's all can be seen out there right now, different aspects of what is covered in Handmaid's Tale. Brave New World with Aldous Huxley, Ursula K. Le Guin with The Dispossessed, Fahrenheit 451, Ray Bradbury.
Ray, I forgot all about Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, definitely with that one. That's totally political there, the book. Oh, yeah, no. Talking about Wells with The Time Machine, Starship Troopers.
Wells laid it out pretty hardcore, and then he did some other stuff besides that, some of his shorter writings too. But it's just weird how you can't seem to escape it in sci-fi. You're right. It's just built in.
Yeah,
you get it out. I mean, I'm sure you can write or make a book or a movie without there being politics. Just, you know, following one alien along, whatever the alien's doing, or something along those lines. Or, you know, maybe discovering a new planet where there is no politics. But you're right, inherently it's there. I don't think you can really get out of it. It's a hard thing to get around. You know, we've been doing some time travel shows on the network lately, and what they call O-parts, out-of-place parts. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what out-of-place part is, it's when they find something like a battery or a cog or some type of wrench or something in a geode or a piece of coal that's a million years old. Remember, we're supposed to be the pinnacle of life on this planet, and we've only been here for 2 million years, and really, we've only been civilized for about 12,000 years. So when you start finding things that date back a million and a half, 800,000 years, or 10 or 15 million years, like the one found in the coal mine, where did it come from? How did it get there? So sci-fi takes stuff like that, and they just eat that up. So you can write something about, you know, a civilization from the past, a civilization from the future. It's like if you were to imagine those two sunken cities off the coast of India that we found from the last tsunami that date back about 12,000 years. I imagine that's two really good novels there. You know, how did the cities get wiped out? Some probably good sci-fi. And I guarantee there'd be a lot of politics of the time in there, which would have been the Indian culture at the time. But I would imagine you find that. And then when you look, you know, a friend of mine brought me a book on Indian beliefs. And what I mean, I'm talking about Indian people, country Indian, not Native Americans. And so in case you didn't know, they're a very political society, just in case y'all didn't know. But even in their writings, in their genre of things like flying things in the sky, you know, 5,000 years ago, 7,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, it sounds like sci-fi, but for them, it's real. They don't think it's sci-fi. For me, it sounds like really, really good sci-fi with some really heavy-duty politics in it. You know, some kind of war blazing across the skies. But it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's old. You can go back 200 years and find sci-fi that fought. Well, look at Frankenstein. Somebody told me, well, there's no politics in Frankenstein. I said, then why did they chase him down and kill him? There's lots of politics there, man. So it was discrimination. I said it was a lesson to be learned there. And Mary Shelley wrote that, what, 150, 170 years ago? I'd have to look it up to be sure. But, you know, when you look at things like this, you got to wonder, you know, was this intentional? Was the politics of the lesson intentional? We know, people, if you're watching anything that Gene Roddenberry wrote, it's embedded in there. He actually, even in his old Westerns, he embedded a lesson in everything he wrote. So that's just there. You know, whatever the lesson may be, you know, like the first black and white kiss on television. That's a sci-fi. That sci-fi had that option. Not just that. Come to think about it, sci-fi had a lot of firsts on television that no other series was brave enough to touch. But for some reason, science fiction could get away with things that other people couldn't. So I found that interesting. I mean, you know, and when you get into Star Trek, the politics Star Trek from the original series, it was pretty heavy. You know, they were really trying. Roddenberry had a thing that he was trying to teach humanity lessons. You know why? I don't know idea. I don't think it was about money. I don't know why Roddenberry did it. And even when the new generation came out, they were still embedding lessons in those series. Each and every episode had some little lesson they wanted to learn. No, not the only ones who did it. Lost in Space did it. I mean, you can go back to what is his name? He produced all kind of weird sci-fis in the 50s and 60s. I'd have to go look at his name. Ian, what the hell is his name? But see, here's what happens when you get old, your brain goes. But he had just at least five or six really popular series back in the day, from Lost in Space to The Giants and all kind of other series in between. The time travel people, when they went back in time. And every one of those series had politics in it. You couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, they managed to pull off. Well, what was the one 2000 Leagues Beneath the Sea? That's a 60s, maybe early 70s, late 60s. Serious politics. And we're talking about nuclear weapons. And yet, there it was. And somehow or another, they played it off. Got a movie and I think a three-year series out of it. And yet, somehow managed not to get in any trouble. You know, I go back and watch these. I was watching Buck Rogers from the 25th Century the other day. Stupidest thing you could possibly watch. Oh my God! If they were to say things like that today, the cancel culture would lose their mind. I mean, they would lose their mind. They had the little beagly 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 robot hitting on girls. Oh my God! It would just not go over well today. So it does show that we've made progress. I guess you can call it progress. I don't know how much of what's going on today is progress and how much of it's just, I don't know, hate or something. But I have noticed that in like Star Trek Discovery, their politics have changed. And that went from a series of let's be light and love and change the world to, oh my God, the world sucks. If Gene Roddenberry was alive today, he'd probably lose his mind over that. And I'm going to tell you this, people, it's a good series as long as you don't take it as Star Trek. If you take it as sci-fi, it's a lot of fun to watch. Got a lot of craziness in it. It's great. But if you take it as a Roddenberry piece of work, oh no. It is not Star Trek in any shape, form, or fashion. That is not what Roddenberry thought the future was going to be like. And he even laid down the future that where that's going on. That's when Kirk was probably a first officer at the time. So we already had a good idea of what was going on at the time. And somehow or another, Paramount just said, well, we're going to rewrite everything. And you can't do that when you got a genre that's that long. I mean, what do we got? Series in it, seven series plus all the cartoons. And even the cartoons, like Thundercats and the ones that Transformers, all of them had lessons in them, all of them. And they were usually something politically based. So even when we were kids, before we were even smart enough to know we were being indoctrinated, we were being indoctrinated. It's being put into our heads. You got to choose a side. You know, most people are going to choose a good side or the guy in the right, you know, the guy who's doing the right thing, but not always. So I've always found it funny that they usually, sci-fi usually lay out at least three sides. I guess that way, you know, for the middle, the left, and the right, everybody's got something to choose.
So now when you do your show, The Centralist, So you basically take down the middle so you can have your guests from either side and just be able to just carry on with them.
Well, that way it doesn't turn into a fight. When I used to do politics, hardcore politics on News on the Flip Side, it was different because we still took a middle view, but we didn't give the guests any leeway of whatever their crazy left or right views may be. Today it's a little different. So today, usually if we're going to have guests, we'll do a 2-hour show. The first hour will just be the news. We'll just present the news to you as news. No opinions, just the news. So we'll say, hey, look, this is the source of the news. This is where the news came from. Check out the source for yourself. We recommend this story, blah, 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 blah. Now, in the second hour, when we have a guest on, sometimes we'll go back and cross over those stories. We'll go back and see what the left or the right really believes. And today, you know, when I was a kid, the left and the right were only about this far apart. Today, they're like this. I mean, it's like night and day sometimes. And what gets me is, if the other one starts agreeing, the other one changes its mind. It's they're like a bunch of 12-year-olds, not even that, a bunch of 8-year-olds fighting with each other today. It's ridiculous. And I don't even know what to think about it. And these people get so mad. You know, I got an interview coming up with Mayor de Blasio. And the more I listen to him speak, the harder I think this interview is going to be on me. Even being in the Central, he is, you know, I'm like, okay, well, we'll see how it goes. But look, when I did a bunch of scientists on the network, because I did about 14 in a row, I thought it might be a little hard on our guests. And two, I figured, oh, somewhere along the line, I'm going to offend someone. But no, it went over real well. We got into the science of what they wanted to talk about, and then we got into the science about what I wanted to talk about, and it shows seemed to flow really good. I think that's one of the reasons Science and Beyond made it to the next level. And by the way, people, you know somebody podcast, tell them Science and Beyond, Science and Beyond. Tell them go vote because we finally got over there. But, you know, you've got to take a stance that allows you to see both sides, whatever it is. It really doesn't even matter in today's life what it is. If you're looking at one side, you're missing out on something. You know, you're losing out on something. And even if you think the other side's crazy, there may be something over there that they're right about. So, you know, you got to watch. And sci-fi somehow or another throws that in your face, in a lot of ways blatantly throws it into your face, and yet still gets away with it, and sometimes even gets awards for it. So you and I couldn't do that. If we did what some of the sci-fi shows did, we wouldn't even be able to talk. in 6 months. I don't know you can do that. You can do that in the UK too, so, and in Australia, but not here you can't. You could try to kick one out in 6 months, but it's just not going to happen. I mean, they'd have to do something insane to get impeached in 6 months. And there is Article 25, which is basically a vote of no confidence, but takes 2/3 of the Congress. And I mean, come on. No, I haven't seen anybody control 2/3 of the Congress. I'm almost 60 years old, and I don't think I've seen 2/3 of the Congress controlled by one party the whole time I've been alive. I don't know when you'd have to go back to find that. Maybe World War II or something. When the Great Deal happened, I don't know, but it's been a long time. So that's why impeachments are funny to everybody in America. We just laugh at them because we know nobody's getting impeached. It's just a word today. It used to have meaning back in the day, but today, it's somebody told me that they were screaming at me at a lecture. Oh, no, I said he resigned. Don't get upset at me. I'm not the one who made him resign. And I said, technically, they impeached Clinton, but he didn't lose, just like they impeached Trump, and he didn't lose. So you can say they were impeached, but since nothing happened to him, it seems to be a moot argument. You know, it's kind of a waste of. And each time we do this, in case you're not aware, ladies and gentlemen, it costs us $40 million. So it's $40 million that could have been going to your community that we wasted on something that everybody knew was never going to happen, including the people. So that's just the politics. But you'll see that kind of stuff, like in Babylon 5. You'll see that carry over when they're trying to get rid of the leaders. You'll see that just in this series expanse. You'll see it in this where they were trying to get rid of the leader like this. So you'll see it in these different series. And so it does kind of portray how America, not just America, is the world. That's one of the things I like about Babylon 5, because it's closer to portraying how the world would be as we get into the future, not just the countries. It really has a different layout about, you know, each alien race would basically represent a government on this planet. It's an interesting series to watch. And that, your boy uses quotes from some of the greatest writers in the world or stuffed into that series here and there and there and here. And,
yeah,
you know, so it's interesting. But in today's world, the special effects are average. Back then, they would have been good. Today, they would just be considered average. But it's still good to watch. But I'm with John. I would start somewhere. There's a lot of good stuff that came out in the mid-50s. Get a chart. Look through it. You'll be amazed at how much of that stuff still plays really well in today's world.
Well, there was a Heinlein wrote this book, Starship Troopers, which like Heinlein wasn't, he was very pro-American. He was very much from the military. He was very much respected for that. And he really, really respected the military and what it was doing there. But Starship Troopers was pretty much one of the more controversial stories that he wrote, because it was a world where citizens can only vote if they've served, where life as a soldier is being able to exercise that right is what's revered. So, you know, there's a definite, I guess with politics in science fiction, you can play out a what-if scenario and just write it and take it out, because it is science fiction. It isn't necessarily science facts. So you can make a statement and say, okay, now this is my I'm proclaiming this, or I'm stating this is my thesis, and here I'm going to write this in order to play it out to see how this goes. And so you see a lot of the science fiction will do that. It's interesting when one of Heinlein's good friends, Ron Hubbard, he wrote his book on Final Blackout. And there, Hubbard was accused of being a communist by fascists. He was accused of being a fascist by communists. He was accused of being anti-socialist. It was just all this. It was pre-World War II that he wrote it, but it was talking about what if the war didn't end. And it was a concept of, you know, just, it ultimately it would be the soldier on the ground that would survive a never-ending war as the unkillables, but the political factions that were constantly going on trying to do one up on the other person, irrespective of what was happening to the little man, the person that just needed to go on living their life. So I think that's something that's really important that people need to, in writing science fiction politics, is have a perspective. What are you trying to sell with this thing? What are you trying to communicate on this that's going to give it you know, not saying, okay, I'm going to push for X, or I'm going to push for Y, or push for Z, but tell a story which gives how X handles, how Y handles, and how Z handles, so that you can come up with your own perspective of the politics of that story or that setting.
You know, I was thinking, because I was listening to some of L. Ron Hubbard stuff the other day, coming back from New Orleans. I was actually finishing up a story that I'd been listening to for about a day and a half. And people, not a whole day and a half, y'all think I'm insane. I get to listen. I get an hour ride in the morning, an hour ride in the afternoon. So I'll usually plug in one and listen. If I don't have any calls to make them not work-related, I'll usually listen. And I just finish it up now. He does get into the political side of some stuff in there.
Yeah.
But he seems to do it in a very nonchalant way. It does. Well, maybe that's not quite right, because there's some places that's kind of bold and in the face. But for the most part, it's an underlying part of the story. It's not, even though politics is there, it's not the featured part of the story. Maybe they went to Mars or the moon, or they were doing this, or they were time traveling. Because I think there's three different time travel stories in there. So he puts you in the future, he puts you in the past, and there is politics there, but it's underlying. It's not the outright part. It's not slapping you in the head, outright politics. Now, if you're paying attention and you're listening, then you're going to catch it. But a lot of people, I noticed on their first read of a book or their first watch of a movie, miss a lot of stuff. And it always amazes when somebody's watching something for the third time, they're like, wow, I didn't hear that. Wow, I didn't see that. Wow, I didn't. I said, well, yeah, because now you've heard all the stupid stuff, or all the main stuff, I should say. And now your brain is actually looking and listening for different things. And it's the same thing with a good book. You read through it, even though you've read it, and I've watched people do this a million times. I've done it myself. I've read through and missed part of the story because I'm in a hurry to read through, or I've really gotten into it. I'm just reading at a faster pace than I should be. So that's why a lot of times I'll go back and reread something within a couple of days or a couple of weeks after reading something. I can read it a little faster, but there are times I find that I miss stuff. And sometimes, like in a political thing, I may, how I can say this politely, glaze over it. Knowing that it's something political, I might just, but a lot of times if you do that, you may miss a good underlying part of the story that you really need to complete the story. So I know people, sometimes you get turned off by politics, but out of all the genres that are out there, science fiction does it usually in a way that it's not offensive. It can be in your face, and it can even make you want to take a side. But somehow they manage to do it without getting people protesting in front of their movie theaters, calling up the writers, calling up the publishers, and just having fits with them. I don't know how, and I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but somehow or another, for the most part of science fiction, and when I'm talking about science fiction, I'm not just talking about space genre. There are other genres out there that seem to be able to do this. You know, like time travel seems to be able to do it. Or some of the stuff like just recently, some dinosaur thing. But somehow or another, they had the dinosaurs, they had the people, then they had the tribes, and somehow they had politics involved in all of it. And I guess the politics of living in a place like that, I guess there would be some sort of politics. And, I guess you got to deal with the natives, or two different types of natives. I don't know what kind of politics you're doing with the T-Rex other than shooting the SOB, but still, hey, Mr. T-Rex, please don't eat me. That's not going to work. But it's just so much of it incorporated in everything we watch. And in a way, I kind of feel for our kids because they're being indoctrinated into politics without realizing it, because it is there. But in another way, I feel like it's early lessons to help you choose your side. And like, I don't really choose a side. I like being in the middle. A good friend of mine the other day said, you know what they said, if you're in the middle, you're going to burn. I said, I ain't going to burn. I'm just fine up on the fence. I'm not getting stuck on no pickets or anything. I said, I like being there, because I've learned over the years is, what I've mostly learned over the years is the left and the right, whatever side you're on. If you're far left or far right, you're usually wrong. You're usually into things for the wrong reasons. You're too far out there, and you're not thinking about the majority of the people, which is the middle. In case you ought to notice, ladies and gentlemen, independents and centralists make up the majority of voters, 56%. So the parties don't control that much anymore, about 20%, but they have the money, so therefore they control the power. And that's also portrayed in sci-fi. You see that in a lot of different sci-fi. I was just watching an episode of Voyager the other day when they go to this world, and it's divided up, you know, through politics. You know, who they thought was better, who they thought was worse. A place that our world visited, I don't know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, wasn't necessarily slavery. They just said, you know, well, you're from this family, so you're down here. You're from here, you're okay. So it was a bottom, middle, and a hierarchy, but not so much the way you see it today. You know, if you were at the bottom, that was it. You were never getting anywhere. You could never get anything. And it just portrayed it like that. And about 100 years ago, you could 100 years and back, you could look at our world and say that was true in a lot of countries, especially in the countries that had monarchy. So, you know, you see these in there, and your kids see this in there, and they get indoctrinated in this, and it absorbs in their head. And hopefully it's lessons that they're learning that will actually better us in the long run. And no, I'm not talking about the cancel culture, because they're morons too. You know, anytime everything is wrong, then you got an issue. You know, I like my country. There's a lot of things I like about it. I'm not always happy with the politics, but I am willing to stand up for it. And I am willing to get in the middle of it and say, hey, look, there are better ways of doing things. And I've learned over the years, compromise a lot of times is the best thing that can serve politics. And that's one thing you do see in sci-fi. Somewhere along in a story, there will be a compromise so that the heroine or whoever it may be can get to the end of the story. So you will see a compromise in politics there, which I'm hoping that children have absorbed that over the years. That's in their head, and they'll learn that that's what we need today is compromise. We don't need nukes. We don't need a bunch of crazy people. We just need to take all sides to agree and move to the next step. All sides to agree, move to the next step. I guess you and I will be long gone before that happens. That's all we can hope.
So now you've done a lot of shows with the Centralists. As both of those shows you talked about, the News on the Flip Side and Centralists, are those both politics?
Yeah, News on the Flip Side was a way different show. So I hosted that with Stephanie Benetti. I was doing the Trump before Trump was president, and he did it up until he won for about 4 years. This was a hard hitting news show. It had 4 million followers. It was well on the way to getting several big syndications. So what we did on that show is we did the first hour or the first 50 minutes. It was just hardcore news, no opinions, just hardcore news. Then at the last 10 minutes of that hour, it was just a segment from one of our hosts that came on and did a particular news segment. Usually it had something to do with the environment or something like that. The second hour of that show was sheer satire. We made fun of everybody. I mean, of everybody, everything and everybody was just great. It was great stress relief. And then the end of that show was another 10-minute segment, usually doing something with technology. The third hour was a little bit different. We had a third host came on, and it wasn't as much about opinion as it was just going over the stories that we talked about, adding anything in new, and just really presenting it in a much more coherent way than you'd see on the regular news. And then the last hour was always international news. We always did an hour international news. The show was fabulous. It was fun. It was packed. Stephanie was a great co-host. We had a lot of good times doing the show. Unfortunately, she's passed away now, but it was a lot of fun to do. The show was just nothing you had seen anywhere on the news. That's why it was growing at an extremely rapid rate because, you know, just put this in. So, you know, people give me trouble about Donald Trump and some of the other candidates. So this was my exact point when I seen the GOP put their people up, 21 people. I looked up and I said, Stephanie, is that a duck? What the hell is that yellow clown? I was all over Donald like white on rice. So we're going on. So he wins. I'm stunned that he won, by the way. I was just stunned. And so I'm still on him nonstop. And then Democrats went and Hillary's up. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, the end of the world has come. It's just the end of the world. There's no doubt one of these two are going to kill us and wipe us out. We did hardcore hit news on both of them. We pulled stuff out of their past that even NBC and CBS were scared to touch. We got into all sorts of stuff. I had interviews from women that had they bring charges against Bill. And Hillary knew about it. They had said that Hillary had came to them personally and paid them off. We had interviews with women that said Trump had done things to them. We had business dealers with both Hillary and Trump come on the network. And I actually got a call from NBC one time. I'm like, how are you getting these people? We can't even talk to them. So we're offering them money. And then they come and said, because they know. They come in here, we're just going to present the story as they're saying it. We're not going to doctor it. We're not going to edit it. We're going to put it out what they're saying and what we think about it, but that's how it's going to go out. I said, so that guest knows when he leaves that show, what he said is going out with no editation to it whatsoever. I said, you know as well as I do, If you're on a big network, I've done lots of TV people, not as much as some other people I know, but I've done a lot of TV. And it's never what I exactly say. It's always been changed, or some words have been put together and some words have been stretched out. And it's irritating. You know, it's just, I did a local news, a local political show down here, and they tried to get everything I said and twist it to the left. So I called them and said, please remove it from your lineup. And they're like, why? I said, because it's not what I said. And they said, well, you can't. I said, oh, yes, I have a copy of it and I'm going to play it. And I said, you either can correct it or whatever you want. So they got real mad at me, threatened to sue me, all kind of stuff. And then I played the whole thing, the city. I played it over the city. And I got a lot of phone calls. And I said, well, they changed. I said, yes, they changed. I said, they always change. I said, big companies like that want have an agenda. And they, you know, I did another interview with NBC. I interviewed a big wig over there, one of their top show people. Until a couple of days ago, they weren't going to play it. It's 3 years old now. They paid me big money not to play it. But I got a recent call lately that they might go ahead and play it. I'll tell you why I didn't want to play it. It's a very hardcore left liberal leaning host. Well, the interview she did with me, she came off more in the middle, even a little right, than what she was actually doing on the air. So they got all paranoid. I got a phone call. Oh, Joe, you know, we got an agreement with you. If you didn't like it, you can't. I said, yes, I understand that. And there was an amount of money agreed to if it didn't air. But it's a shame because it was her. It was her and her, I should say, her wife. And it was a great interview. They did a great job. They really laid themselves out on the table for the world to see. And the big company said, we don't want the world to see it because they were scared it was going to cost them numbers. I mean, I understand why they did it. But they agreed to the questions. You know, anytime I do a really big interview with somebody, I will send them 25 questions. They'll send me it back, and I'll send it to them. We'll go back and forth usually a week or two. And we'll agree on everything, you know, and how it's going to be said, and we'll agree on everything. It's not that it's scripted, but it's like that. And it just comes out. And it's funny because while her and I were talking that night, she brought up sci-fi on 5 different occasions. She said, because of the politics of these shows, I got into the news media. I mean, it was a great interview, and they just didn't want to do it. It's like when I did an interview with NASA. NASA had released these little series of, I don't know what you would call them. They were little cartoons, basically. And I had called up the interview with them, and I said, why can't y'all be a little bit more straightforward in your science? I said, it's fine that you're doing a cartoon, and I know you're trying to get kids interested, but kids aren't as stupid as they look. Why don't you give them a little bit more of the science mixed into the series? Well, they thought it was a bad idea. Well, guess what? The series got canceled because it didn't do what? It didn't have enough science in it. I'm thinking you should have listened. I mean, come on, I've been doing this a long time. You should have listened. And it's hard to get interviews with people at NASA, by the way. But everyone, and I got to be honest with y'all, I have never interviewed anybody at NASA, and I've interviewed 12 of the Apollo Gemini astronauts, and I've interviewed about 14 of the shuttle astronauts, and every one of them told me the same thing. I got into this because it's science fiction. I got into this because it's science fiction. Now, don't get me wrong, they all were quoting different TV shows. Some were like, some would quote Star Trek. A couple of them quoted The Twilight Zone. And not just The Twilight Zone, the other version of The Twilight Zone.
Outer Limits?
Yeah, Outer Limits. So a lot of them quoted because of stuff they seen in there, and they felt the science should be more correct. So they got involved. And matter of fact, I remember the guy who invented the laser. First time I ever heard him interview, I was young. I was a teen. I wasn't even a teen. I was a pauper. He said because he had seen a laser on Buck Rogers way back when in the 30s, and he needed to invent one. And sure enough, he invented the damn thing. And it's not just that. Recently, they've got these new hospital beds that have these monitors on them. And the gentleman who invented it, when he was asked, he said he got the idea from Star Trek.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sci-fi is a good thing, people, whether it's politics or whatever. It gets people involved thinking in ways that other shows and other series just don't. I mean, you can watch a lot of garbage. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff to watch on television today. I mean, really. Between the computers and your internet and your TVs, there's a lot you can watch. But how much of it really leaves you leaving satisfied and feels like, yeah, it may have made a difference in someone's life? Just because it's entertaining doesn't mean it can't change someone. And I actually talked to Michio Keiko about that. He agreed 100%. It can change. And a lot of things can. And there's a lot of riders who don't get credit for how they've changed society, including L. Ron. He doesn't get the credit he deserves for changing society. A lot of people, because of their writings, opened up people's minds and a lot of different fronts, and it changed the world.
Yeah, a lot of the things I think that science fiction you do too is satire, which on recent surveys we found out that the baby boomers and millennials will understand what, or rather Gen X will understand what satire is. But when we surveyed some of the people that were the Gen X and millennials, they didn't know. I don't read satire, but we asked them, well, what about 1984 and all those things? They said, oh, yeah, I've read all those things. Yeah, those are the classics. Or those are comedy. They, you know, they think satire is like The Onion or Saturday Night Live.
I'm not even sure if the Z-geners read. I got to be honest with you. It scares me. So I'm not even sure if the Z-geners read. Every now and then, I was given a science fiction lecture about 7 months ago, right in the middle of COVID. And about 200 Z-geners showed up, and we were talking about things that any normal person, even a millennial, would have known, and they were just lost. And they kept asking me questions. What's this about? What's that about? I said, obviously, you've never seen any of these. Before I left that day, I gave a big, long list of books and movies they should read. And I gave my email. I said, why don't you write back to me and tell me what you think? Out of the 200, 150 of them wrote to me and said, thank you. And I said, I've never seen any of this. I brought up 1984. They were like, well, what happened in 1984? I said, it was a boring year, but it was a good book. And they're like, wait, what? It's a book. And I went through a couple of others, and one girl said, Dune, well, that hasn't even come out yet. I almost peed on myself. And I said, no, baby, there's some good Dunes out there. I said, just because something's more than 2 years old doesn't mean it's not good. I said, just because it's more than 40 years old. I said, you will be amazed at how much science fiction you can find from 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years ago that still holds up today. And, you know, they forget how many great writers they were back in the day. And, you know, somebody asked me the other day, when did science fiction start? I said, oh, I have no idea. When I looked it up, it said 16 something. I forgot the name of the book. Because a lot of people were giving Mary Shelley it 1800s, but this puts it back. I think it was like 1690 or 1670. And I'd have to actually look it up again to see the name of the book. And I was like, I never even heard of it. So I went looking for it. I was like, well, I've never heard of this. I got to find this and read this. And it was interesting to learn.
So with the subject of satire, it's that's one way of actually pointing out the foibles of a lot of it is politics, you know, that it points out, and it shows the shortcomings of various, whether they're the politicians or a certain type of politics. But it's done by changing it, you know, like with George Orwell, you put it way into the future so that, you know, you can kind of like, people can look at it and have their own thinking of it. But, you know, if you're in Britain at the time that he wrote it, you won't realize he's writing about British politics there and British society.
Yeah.
So the same thing with, you know, these other Brave New World from Aldous Huxley, Man in High Castle, all these things here talk about by changing the location or the time that they're able to actually point out some of the foibles or some of the shortcomings of various systems by changing the settings. So like, okay, I can't say that it's right here and right now and these people here, even though all the descriptions or the activities represent who those people are. So that's something that science fiction is very known for and can actually effectively pull off. But I'm just curious for yourself, you know, because you've done so much working with, you know, interviewing politicians and people about politics and interviewing the people who interview the politicians. So the best way to like communicate it from your perspective, because you've obviously survived various, you know, firestorms on politics by still doing what you do. What's the best way you've been able to do it? And because I know that people are reading this, that are listening to this podcast, are writing science fiction and they've got their political bents they don't be able to communicate. How have you been able to do it to survive it and still live to tell the tale and continue talking about politics to weave it in?
Two things I do on a regular basis. I'm very honest with whatever I'm talking about, but I'm a big fan of satire. I use satire even in politics. Like Michael Anglin and I will get on a show sometimes. So we'll pick out like 10 stories we're going to handle that. Like this week, you know, we're going to be talking about Afghanistan, the border. But even in all that, even in all this depravity that's going on, we will have satire woven into that. We will be cracking jokes about different things. So it keeps people's attention. So in other words, if I was just to do the flat story on Afghanistan, what's going on there, it would be 5 minutes. That would be all it would be. And people would either listen to it or not listen to it. So in the beginning of the show, we probably will do it. But then later on, we'll be talking about different things that go along with what's happening there. So we'll weave it in. And it's funny because both of us like science fiction. So we'll, a lot of times we'll weave in like a science fiction story with a little satire into the politics. People love it and people stay and pay attention to it. And I've noticed the younger audience, the millennials and the Z-geners, have an easier time absorbing it. The older ones, you know, the X-geners and the boomers, they understand it for politics, but the younger generations pick it up because, one, it's not an hour long. It's 5 or 10 minutes. It's weaving in there. The satire is woven in there. The truth is still woven in there, but it's woven in with the satire. And people get and sometimes they get offended because we might pick on their particular, you know, politician, but we pick on everybody. That's what, and now that that's the truth, that is a one saving grace for me. Because when I got into politics, I remember this guy wrote to me one day. He said, "You are probably one of the most brilliant ufologists I have ever met in my entire life." He said, "But when it comes to politics, you're the biggest moron." He said, "How can it be?" I said, "Did you ever stop and think that the same research I do that makes me brilliant there actually is why I do here?" And he was just dumbfounded. Like, no, I can't be. Like, he could not be wrong. I said, "No, you need to think about what you just said." I said, "I got a big, huge team of people that work with me on all of this." I said, "None of them have the same political view, but yet sometime I manage to be able to keep them all together, keep them all talking and all having fun at the same time. When we do a political panel show, there'll be 7 or 8 of us. Everybody on that show has a different political view, from far left to far right to independent to central to libertarian to whatever. And somehow we can have a show, be civil, everybody can still get their point across and have a lot of fun while we do it, because we'll pick on each other through the whole show. And all our audience does is grow. It doesn't shrink. It works really well. It's a good combination for me. Hopefully the mainstream media has never figured out, because you know they don't do it that way. And people enjoy it more. They have a lot more fun. Matter of fact, a guy wrote to us just the other day, said, "Yeah, y'all make news fun." I said, "Well, you know, it's news. I mean, some stories you can't because they're just horrible, but some stuff you can actually make fun and pick on. And even hardcore stuff, it was a political show, but it was on abortions, but we did it with extraterrestrials taking people and taking the kids. So it was a serious show, but it still had a little jump junk in there that people were like, so it didn't make it unbearable for the people like the Z-geners and the millennials. The Z-geners and millennials are not to that serious level that you and I and some of the X-geners have reached. We're older. We've seen a lot of stuff in our lives, so we actually know what's right and what's wrong. But, you know, when you're young, you've got hormones going and things flying around. And so I want to keep their attention. So I present it in a way that, you know, they would enjoy watching it. And I've gotten lots of positive feedback on it. And since the station's adopted that in the last 6 or 7 years, we had like 0.1% Z-gen and about 3% of millennials. That's way changed. We're pulling about 14% of the Z-geners and about 22% of millennials now. That's the same as we're pulling with the X-geners. Well, I'm sorry, with the baby boomers. So it's a comfortable group. People understand what we're trying to do. And since everybody in the network's averse in some type of science fiction because of some of the other stuff we do, the other day we were talking about Jules Verne's, and a good friend of mine who teaches science at Harvard, I'm sorry, at Tulane, tells me, he goes, "Man, it wouldn't be for sci-fi. I wouldn't know diddly squat about physics." He said, "I wouldn't know anything about science." He said, "That's what did it for me." He said, "When I first started watching the first generations of Star Trek," he said, "it was all right. And then it went away and I kind of got, well, he said, and my dad told me something. He said, "You know, there's a library, son. Why don't you go check out some books?" And sure enough, he started checking out one book and the other book. Then he realized he started things that was in that science fiction. He wanted to invent. He wanted to bring into the real world, not just equipment, but attitudes. You know, because you know a lot of sci-fi. Once you move forward past where we are today, a lot of the attitudes are we need to work together as a society to move society forward as a whole. So that kind of stuff comes across, and I've been lucky. Because I tell you what, there are people that I know personally that would not mix with the other three shows I do in politics. They say it's detrimental to your career, but for mine, it's not. Because I do incorporate it, you know. And don't get me wrong, John, I can do some hardcore news sometimes. But usually I'm going to, later in the show, I'm going to always incorporate some satire in there. And I'm gonna bring the point home, you know, but I want people to have a little fun while I'm bringing it. And you'd be surprised how horrible some stories are that you can actually somehow make people smile after listening to it.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing, but sci-fi is great for that kind of stuff. It's
just, absolutely.
Well, we were talking about, what's not Mission Earth, the one with Travolta was it started.
Battlefield Earth.
And we were talking about that one and the remake, all of that. That poor movie, people, the book is just you need to read it because the movie just does no justice to it whatsoever. It's not that the movie isn't fun and campy. It is kind of campy and fun, but it just there's so much lost in the translation. And I didn't know. A friend of mine kept griping at me about it. He said, "No, Joe, the movie was great, but he said, you got to read a book. And you know, when my friend started on me about that, sooner or later, one of them's going to send me a book. Or they'll send me, a lot of times they'll send me an audio tape so they'll know I'll listen to it, but an audio, whatever it comes in these days. But.
So anyway, so this has been, I've really enjoyed talking with you in this last hour here. And I think the three shows that you've got that people should check out, it's on United Public Radio Network. They just go to UPRN.com, is that?
UPRN.com, UrbanTalkRadio.com, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
UPN Talk Radio, and if you're going to come for me, you'll catch me on Friday doing Science and Beyond for the next 5 weeks because it's up for an award for People's Choice. So we'll be doing a lot of science on there. It's Science and Beyond. So sometimes it's hard science, but we've done things like we've talked about dark matter and different things like that. But we've also talked about like the Shroud and Turin and things like that. And a lot of other things that have to do with science, but also have alternative explanations. So we'll see a lot of that in there too. Matter of fact, John DeSalvo, we had, how can I say this? Many heated discussions about this, but he's got a PhD. I've got a bachelor's. So I got a bachelor's in science. So we have a lot of fun talking about it, and it is. And then of course you always can catch me. Well, right now on Wednesday we're doing the Centralist. That's what the Centralist is. And on Monday we do Paranormal Talk. But usually on Wednesdays I do UFO Undercover. But it's kind of on hiatus right now because of where Science Beyond is, and of course. Because of a lot of other things going on. And don't forget, on Saturday, I host with the lovely Michelle DeRochier on The Gray Zone Uncensored. Now, I'll tell you a secret about that show. That show averages between 2 and 3 million listeners, but you can only get it on Saturday. Once it's done, you can't get it again. Eventually, it'll go back for pay for listen on YouTube, probably in about 6 months or so. But all of them right now, it's either listen on Saturday or not listen. We're doing time travel right now. It's been, all I can say is it's been fun.
That's great.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of times. We had to do UFOs for a month because, you know, they had the big thing. The Pentagon's going to tell us the truth. I got cussed. I mean, I won a lot of money over this, but I got cussed by all kinds of people. I was doing shows all over the country. I'm like, no, they're not going to tell us anything. No, I bet you might. I said, I bet you grand. They ain't going to tell us nothing. I bet you 500. I said, I'm telling you, they're not going to tell us nothing. This went on. And then they released it. Of course, they didn't tell us anything. I think I got like 14 grand all together. And it was easy money. I was like, I had a guy in New York. He said, I'll give you my Mercedes. I said, dude, don't do that because you're going to lose your Mercedes. I heard his wife must have been at home. No, baby, not the Mercedes. I started laughing. I said, she told you, you don't know what you're talking about, not the Mercedes. But, I mean, you know, and I'll say this before, I know we got to go, but people, if you ever want anything from the government, if you want truth from the government, you have to give them something. Okay, they're not. Not going to spill their guts on whatever it is unless you're given something. And whatever that something is going to probably be amnesty for whatever bad deeds the government may have done in the past, that the people who done them are probably dead now. If you want the truth, you're going to have to give them amnesty because the government has done things and whatever genre we were talking about here that they shouldn't have. And they've experimented on people. They've done other stuff. You see, that's in a lot of the sci-fi books too. You're going to have to give them amnesty. That's the only way you're going to ever get the truth. Because I'm not going to come out and tell you the truth. I know I'm going to do 20 years in jail. You can forget that. That's not going to happen. And is everything so compartmentalized these days, you're going to have to give them amnesty to get to the truth. So just keep that in mind, young generation out there, because if you want to get to the truth, that's what it's going to take.
Well, that's been amazing. So thank you very much, Joe. And thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We've also been syndicated on the United Public Radio Network with Joe Montalvo himself, where you can find these podcasts as well by just typing in Writers of the Future. Again, I highly recommend you read the Writers of the Future series. They are, after all, who our judges have selected as the best of the best new writers and artists. They can be found at writersofthefuture.com, at Amazon, or wherever you get your books. Writers and Illustrators of the Future are contests created by L. Ron Hubbard to provide a means for the aspiring writer and artist to be seen and acknowledged. It is free to enter and open to amateur short story writers and artists of science fiction or fantasy. Again, thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast. This is John Goodwin, your host. This podcast is dedicated to the aspiring writer and artist, and will provide inspiration and tips from top professionals in the field. If you've been listening to this podcast or are new to it, I thank you very much.